God gave it to us.
When the Gemara Nun in Ksubis Nun Beis Amid Aleph 52A3 14 lines in the end of the page. Nun Beis Amid Aleph. Okay, it said in the Mishnah Nishpas Chayev Levdesa. If a woman was captured, the husband is obligated to redeem her, you know, from captivity. Tell Rabbanan learned. Nishmas b'chayi b'ayla, if the woman was captured during the husband's lifetime, v'achakach meiz b'ayla, and then the husband died. So now the question is, do the kids have to redeem her? She was taken captured when the husband was alive, and then the husband died. So the din is like this. Hikir b'ayla, if the husband knew before he died that she was taken captivity, Yoshin Chayev Levdais, then they have to redeem her. Because the husband knew about it. It became his obligation. So therefore it's the kid's obligation because he died. They took over. But if the husband didn't know about it, that she was captured, so the husband, when he was alive, never had a responsibility and obligation to redeem her. So then, Ein Yoshin Chayev Levdais. Okay, then the kids don't have to. Basically, meaning, the lady's captured, then the husband died. If the husband knew about it, the kids have to redeem her. If not, not. So Gemara says, Levi, Levi, the sage Levi, was thinking of acting, paskening a shayla. They had such a case. And he was deciding, based on this braisa, to pasken the din. So Rav said to him, this is what my uncle. He called Rav Chista's uncle. He was Rav's father's brother. So he called him Chavivi. Les hilchasa ki hai masnita. That the halach is not like this braisa. You want to paskin like this braisa, the halach is not like this braisa. El ki ha de tanya, but like a different braisa. It says, nish peslachan mises baylo, if she was taken capture after the husband died. That means the husband died and then she was taken captivity. Eina yusei memchayel of this. Then they don't have to. But if she was taken in captivity while the husband was alive, even if he didn't know about it, even if he didn't know, this price says they would have to redeem her. No, I'm sorry. Even more. Even at the opposite. Even if she was captured when the husband was alive, and then mice by law, then the husband died, they don't have to redeem her. Meaning, he says, interesting, according to the second braisa, the kids never have to redeem her. Whether she was captured before the husband died, after the husband died, regardless, the kids don't have to redeem her. Why not?
He didn't know,
the kids never have to redeem her. Never. Why? So it says, She'ein ani kreda bach, because what did it say in the ksuba? When it's, you know, the unwritten ksuba says, if you will get captured, I will redeem you and make you my wife again. But if he's dead, he can't make her a wife. So if the second half is not applicable, then the first half is not applicable. So Levi wanted a rule that if she was captured when the husband was alive, the kids would have to redeem her. And Rav said, that's not the halacha. Rav Chiya paskin, like the second braisa, that kids never have to redeem the woman. Why? And he says a logical reason, because the Ksuba says, I'll ransom you and make you my wife again. But because he's not around to make him his wife, so therefore they're not obligated to do it. Next is like this. Nishpes. Tell Rabbanan learned. It's a very interesting halacha, by the way. Nishpes, if a woman was captured, and the ransom is 10 times her value. What does it mean, her value? How much you'd be sold on the slave market, that's how you consider the value of a person. So if the captured demanded up to 10 times the amount, it says like this. Pamri Shaina, pay them. If she was captured once, you have to redeem her even up to 10 times her value. Mikav ve'elach, afterwards, ratza peida, ratza ena peida. If he wants to ransom her, he does. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Okay? Meaning? Meaning that according to this opinion, not Rav Shimon Gamliel, this opinion holds, the husband only has to redeem his wife once. After the first time, he's finished. But the first time, even up to 10 times the amount. Even if they're only asking your value.
Isn't it the law that, like, if someone got captured, every community have to help redeem it? So nobody, everybody's in ketubah, say, it doesn't say something?
Yeah, the community, but Bezin can't make the kids pay for it. Or the wife, the husband. The husband's not obligated more than anybody else. No. First time yet, but that's what the Braisa says. First time, up to 10 times the value he has to. Right? And, but afterwards not. Rav Shimon Gamliel, amen? Ein peiden es a shvui in yeisa kdei damem itik in oilem. You never redeem a captive more than they're worth. Why? Mebnei tikkun olam. What does tikkun olam mean? Because then if the captures, if the kidnappers will get so much money, they'll keep doing it. They'll keep doing it. So Chama said, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds, no. The only time you can redeem a person if they're asking for the value. If they're asking for the more the value, then not.
No negotiation with terrorists, yeah?
Huh?
No negotiation
with terrorists. Thing, yeah? That's the famous story with the Merab Mirutenberg.
Who?
Merab Mirutenberg. Rav Meir Mirutenberg. In fact, the book in the Five Nadam paid ransom is the story of him. He was from the Balia Tesis, from the people of Tesis.
What happened to him?
He was the Rosh's, the Rosh's father-in-law. The grandfather of the tour. They kidnapped him, the Goyim. I think he lived in France or Germany, one of those countries. They captured him. They demanded a tremendous amount. He was he was called the Meir HaGoyla. He was, no, not the Rebbe Gershom HaGoyla. The Merab Mirutenberg was the one that actually organized Tesis the way we have them today. The Merab Mirutenberg did it. And they asked a tremendous amount of money. And his son-in-law, the Rosh, went around collecting money from the people and he raised it. He's almost got this tremendous amount of money. And he told his father-in-law, we're getting the money to redeem. He says, I am not going out of here. You're not going to redeem me. Because if you do this, they're going to keep doing it. Like Gemara says here, they're going to take an ilum. He refused to be redeemed. He died in prison. He was in prison for 21 years, dead body, until finally a very wealthy man came and ransomed him out that he should be put to kvura.
He died
in prison.
They didn't bury him for 21 years?
Right.
What did he do with the body?
The guy who kept it in prison.
Is it different than Maharam Shiv?
Yeah, it's a different person.
Is Moshe okay?
Yeah.
He wasn't here 2 weeks ago either.
Okay, so now the Gemara continues. It says like this. Next page, second line. Habachdei demand paidin. So 1 minute. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you don't redeem a person more than the value. But the value, yeah. I forgot the perkena yesa ksubasa. You're telling me what happens? Let's say the ksuba is 200 zuz. And the ransom is 300 zuz. And that's your value. Not more. That's your value. So the Gemara says you only have to redeem her up to 200. No, up to 300. Gemara says, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, you redeem her for her value. How much is her value? 300. He said, even if it's more than the ksuba? The Gemara is asking. Flamin, I'll ask you a question. Sounds like this. Nishbez vayim vakshim menada sada biksubasa. A woman that was taken captive. And they're asking 10 times her value. Pamri shayna peida. First time you redeem her, like we just learned. Mikam ve'elach ratza peida ratza eina peida. He's not obligated to redeem her. Rab Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. This is what we just learned. But over there, it's a little bit different. He said like this. imhaya pirkeina knega ksubasa paida. If her value was equal to the ksuba, then you redeem her. Imlav, and if it's more than the ksuba, he doesn't redeem her.
Even 10 times? Even 10 times? According to the... If it happens like 10 times...
No, the first opinion...
No, according to it...
No, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says... Because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in our braisa says... What we just learned... You never redeem her more than a value.
No, if it's the same value...
1 second. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel before in the braisa says... More than the value... You don't redeem her, period. Okay. So the Gemara says, 1 minute. Here it says, but up to the value, you do redeem her. But that's not true, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, in a different braisa, you only redeem her if her value is as not more than the ksuba. But if it's more than the ksuba, you don't redeem her. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is contradicting himself. Here in our braisa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, you have to redeem her at her value. No matter what the value is.
How much they want.
Right.
Okay.
No, what her value is. If her value is 300 zuz.
It's not what he says in Ketubah?
No, 1 second. Here Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, the first price we learned. Shimon Gamliel says, if she's worth 200, you redeem her for 200. 300, you redeem her for 300. Never more. But never the more value, you do redeem her. That means according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if she's worth 300, you redeem her for 300.
Yes, the value.
So Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, in the next price it says, that when do you redeem her for her value? Only if it's equal to the ksuba. But if it's more than the ksuba, then you don't redeem her. He's contradicting himself here. He says, whatever her value is, you redeem her. And the second price he says, only if it's value. So Gemara says like this. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, today kula is that he holds, it's not a contradiction. He holds of two leniencies. Meaning, the husband does not have to ransom his wife if it's more than her value or if it's more than the ksuba. There's never more than her value and never more than the ksuba.
But if it's more than ketubah, less than value?
Then you only give her the ksuba. No, if her value is less, then you only give her less. You redeem her.
Ketubah is not a value. Ketubah is two totally different things.
No, but
Value is erech. What is value?
No. Value is what she's worth on the slave market.
Okay. But no. Nothing to do with the ketubah.
It does, because the husband can give her the ksubah and say, "You're not my wife anymore. I'm not redeeming you." Let's say the ksuba is 200. Yeah?
Okay.
And she's worth 300. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you only have to redeem her for 200. She's worth 300. Yeah? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says no. Because he can say to you, you know what? I'm divorcing you. I'm going to pay you the ksuba, which is 200. And I'm not going to redeem you for 300. It's too expensive.
He goes with the less.
Yep. That's what he said. They're both leniencies. Yeah. Number one, not more than a value. And secondly, not if it's more than the ksuba.
But how many times?
Once.
Doesn't
it seems that Shimon Gamliel agrees with that aspect.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Doesn't say, but maybe.
I know, but that's what it implies. That's what it implies that Shimon Gamliel says.
Because of Tikkun Haolam?
Yep. You just done ever more than what she's worth. Okay. Then the Gemara says like this. Laksa, if what happens again, the Gemara is talking about the ksuba conditions, even if they're not written, right? Laksa, what happens if she got sick? Chayv la rapeis, the husband has to heal her. That's what it says in the ksuba, right? Okay. Now, Tan Rabban learned, okay, Almana, now the question is, does it go to the kids or not? One of the obligations of the ksuba is that if she gets sick, the husband has to heal her. So now the Gemara is going to discuss, if the husband dies, and the wife's still sick, do the kids, the Yisraim, the heirs, the Yarshim, do they have to keep healing her or not?
Why should we defend that captivity?
Well, see, let's see what the Gemara says. Alman and Nizainus Menichsa Yisraimim, okay? And the woman, Dalman, gets supported from the estate, right? She doesn't inherit the husband, but she gets the estate. Utzricha Refua, and if she needs healing, Harehi Kemezain. It's like food. Meaning, just like they have to feed her, they have to heal her. That's what it says. Healing is like food. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no. Refua Sheyesh Lo Kitzba. If the healing has a limit, that means she's not chronically ill, okay? And the doctor can set a price, okay, this healing will cost you 100 zuz. Nisrapa miksibasa, then she gets healed from the ksuba award. She'en lo kitzva, there's no limit to it. Harehi kemezainis, then it's like sustenance that she keeps getting. It's very interesting, Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel depends if it's a set healing amount or not. If it, let's say it's 100 zuz healing, it comes off to ksuba. If it's not set healing, it could be who knows how much, then the kids have to keep paying it.
And if the set amount is more than the ketubah value, you only go up to the ketubah value?
No, that the Gemara doesn't say here. Because he says like this, just like food is an ongoing expense, so healing, which is ongoing, also have to heal her. Because they food. They live. But if it's set amount, then it's not like food.
If that's the case, even nishpit could be ongoing. For those times going, you know, they would...
But there are different responsibilities.
Is there any logic that why is it the healing and food the same thing? The same concept?
No, if you remember, we learned before in the Gemara... That one is because of the work she does for him, and one is because of. So there's a whole different. There's a different here.
But we said that the woman, the husband, could give a divorce and not, you know, have to kill his wife. Several pages back, because it's a continuous thing.
Yeah, we learned before a while back in the Gemara. There's a difference. One is. Because she brings in money, one is because of food. Well, just do different things. So Amr Abiechan says, also our causes done by Eretz Yisrael. You know, they used to do bloodletting in Eretz Yisrael. And in Eretz Yisrael, they did it often. They did a regular basis for you know, bloodletting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
For healing.
For healing. So therefore, that's a form of food because there's no end to it because you have to keep doing it. What is it? Every week or whatever.
They used to do it in Iran too. They do it.
They used to do it in America too, but they don't do it.
Yeah. They know how to do it.
In America, though, they used to.
They used
to. I think all doctors did healing. That's the way they healed those years.
50, 70 years ago, that was.
That was the method of healing.
That was common practice and older.
I just don't understand how it made sense. I mean. It was a medical, but it worked.
Yeah.
The Gemara is full of that, cause it's dumb. You can take wine and then, you know.
Well, it's but they knew where to cut, exactly.
Yeah, they had to take it out and they
it's
knew
like
where.
It's like dialysis.
I mean,
it was a way of taking the impurities out of the body. Your body.
Yeah, but Rabbi Yechid says in Eretz Yisrael, they used to on a regular basis. That means even if you weren't sick, it was like a preventive medicine.
What do you call this if they put on it in it socks below?
Leeches. Leeches.
No, they're doing it in UCLA.
Yeah.
I was talking with the nurse, they, like a couple of years ago, they started doing it now.
For yeah. Certain types of infections.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. They used to go, what's the, when you turn yellow, jaundice.
Uh-huh.
They used to do it for jaundice.
Olden days, now they're coming back.
And then your pigeons also.
Pigeon was for hepatitis.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. So now the worst
thing now is for very bad burns, they're putting the skin of tilapia. Is the, you know, it's supposed to be very similar to human skin. You know,
they graft it like that.
It's scaly, but it, you know, but it heals. You know. That's just through the compress.
Okay, the Gemara says like this: Kriva Rabbi Yochanan the relative of Rabbi Yochanan, Hava Leitas Abba. Relative of Rabbi Yochanan had a widow of their father. I mean, the father died and there was a widow. Davat Tzricha Refuah Kol Yema. She needed to be healed every day. It was getting expensive.
Well, Davos is like a stepfather?
No. Rabbi Yochanan had relatives who the husband died. It doesn't say what it was. Rabbi Yochanan had a relative that the father died and the widow needed to be healed. And the kids were paying a lot of money. So also the came to Rabbi Yochanan. They came to Rabbi Yochanan and asked him what to do. Are we chayev? Are we not chayev? So instead of paskining the shayla, Rabbi Yochanan gave him advice how to get out of paying. Listen to this. Amalahu, he said to them, I'll tell you what to do. Ezo kutzel amida l'reifet. Go find a doctor that's going to give you a fixed price. Okay, for one lump sum. And then take it off the ksuba. Because then we learned before, if it's a lump sum, it gets off the ksuba. Right? So Rabbi Yochanan said, I know it's chronic, but find a doctor that will cure it for a lump sum, and because it's a set amount, you'll take it off for ksuba, and you guys won't have to pay the money. It'll come off for ksuba.
She has to go like once a while, but the doctor is going to charge for the whole amount?
The doctor will give you like $1,000 for all the times together.
20 times of yeah. Whatever. But still, they're going to go ongoing.
Yeah. So Bechanin didn't paskin. He just gave him the relatives advice how to get out of paying. So Amar later, Rabbi Yochanan regretted what he did. And he said, we made ourselves like lawyers. It says in Pickup, don't make yourself like a lawyer to help the litigant. But in this case, I helped the litigant. And he regretted it. So the Gemara says, so first he did it, and then he regretted it. So what did he think at the beginning? And why did he change his mind? So Gemara says, me kata my sover, save my sover. Why did he change his mind? What did he hold it the first time when he helped them, and why did he change his mind later? He said like this, me kata sover, initially he thought, it says in the pasuk, me psacholoi to salam. From your kin, you should not hide yourself. Meaning you have to help relatives. Like this expression in America, when there's a will, there's a relative. So he said, there's a mitzvah to help relatives. Lipsayf, and that's why he helped them. Then he said, you know what? Adam Choshev Shani. Rabbi Yochanan knew who he was. He said, I'm a prominent person. It's not a good idea. Why? Because people will learn from me to do it also by not relatives. Now, people are going to hear I gave advice to litigants, and I wasn't supposed to. Right? So they're going to learn from me to do things like that.
Well, Lechatkala is a good idea. It is a possible for it.
At the beginning, he said, he thought, you know what, it's my relatives, need to help them.
Yeah.
Then he realized people are going to learn the wrong thing from here.
What's wrong with Adam Choshev Shani? What do you mean? Is it discrimination?
Because he's a Choshev person, other people are going to learn from him to help litigants.
Other Rabbanim.
To help litigants when they shouldn't be.
That wasn't the
betting.
That wasn't like a case.
No, they came to him as a came to him.
Not as a
betting.
To
yeah.
Voice.
No.
That voice. What's wrong with it, Rabbi? If someone come and ask you help, you're not going to answer them, Rabbi.
They came to him as a bezdin. Am I chayv to pay or not? So he told them in eight how to get out of pain.
Because they are relative. How can the relative come to the friend?
So what? Maybe disembowel, whatever.
I can't do that.
He could.
Depends how close they were. This is the widow of some cousin of his. You know.
See, it brings out the bottom into this prohibition applies in the case of our Bichna advising his relatives to avoid an obligation. Because by MS, they were obligated to pay because it was not as continuous. But, however, it's permitted to point out to a litigant that the law is in his favor. That you're allowed to do. Okay. How the Gemara says like this.
You finished that subject with the Mishnah?
Yeah.
Now we're starting a new Mishnah.
Husband is Mekuya for Tidyon Shavuin.
See, that's what Rashi says here. To consider ordinary people will learn from him, Rabbi Yechanan, and advise even non-relatives. Which, by the way, the Pasuk made an interesting thing from the Gemara. So it comes out from the Gemara that a relative you could help. Okay. What's the question?
So what do we learn? What is the maskana? The ketubah that if the husband dies, so the yetomim, they are obligated for the
food, healing, capture,
everything.
But healing is only if it's continuous.
If it's not ongoing.
No, if it is ongoing, then it's like food.
Yeah.
But if it's a lump sum, then, and ransom only, once.
To the value.
Well, Reb Shimon Gamliel says the value. Chum is even 10 times the value. Okay, next Mishnah. Now, all these things we learned before in the previous Mishnah was obligations of the Ksuba, even if it didn't say it. Even if it didn't say, I will ransom you, I will heal you. If you look in today's Ksuba, it doesn't say it, by the way. It doesn't say today's Ksuba, I will heal you, I will ransom you. But it's automatic, even if it's not written. That's what the Mishnah said before. Now the Gemara is going to continue about other obligations of a Ksuba, even if they're not written. What's the case? It sounds like this. The cause of law, if the guy, the chosin didn't write in the ksuba. B'nein dichren the yavalacha minoi. The male children you'll have from me. Inun yarsiv kesef ksubasech. They will inherit the money of your ksuba. Yeser al chukan dimachay. More than they share with the brothers. Even if he didn't write, I'll explain this in a second. Even if he didn't write it, chayv has to pay it. Shutrai bezdin. Okay? This means like this. What's the benin dichrin? Okay? It means like this. According to halacha, when a man dies, I'm sorry, when the wife dies, the husband inherits her. Okay? Biblically. A wife dies, the kids don't inherit her. The husband inherits her. Okay? Then when the husband dies, all the kids divided equally. Okay? So now is a case like this. One wife, he gave a ksuba of 200. One wife, he gave a ksuba of 300. Maybe you could add, Yeah? So, he writes the first wife he had, he wrote it 200. Now he may have a second. Those days you can marry many wives, right? He had two wives. One ksuba was 200, one ksuba was 100.
100
or 300? 300. Okay. Then, if the two wives died, so who got all that money from the ksuba, so to speak? The husband keeps the money. Correct? Now he dies. So, min ha-Torah, all the kids get equal. The first wife's kids, the second wife's kids is their father. They get divided Yerusha equally. Right? But the Chachamim came along and said that the boys of the $200 ksuba are going to get $200 from that ksuba. The boys of the 300 are going to get the 300 ksuba. And then the rest of the money, they divide equally.
Nothing yet.
Yaakov had two wives, Rachel and Leah. Yeah? Rachel had a $200 ksuba, Leah had a $300 ksuba. Both of them had kids. Yeah? So now both wives died eventually. So the 300 and the 200, the $500 from both ksubas goes to the father. Now the father dies. So the kids are going to get equal money. Let's see, the estate was $1,000. Yeah? And there were five kids between both. So each one's going to get $200. Yeah? That's Minat Torah. Chacham said no. If this wife had 200 ksuba, and the other wife had the 300 ksuba, her kids are going to get the 300 ksuba to divide between themselves. The $200 kids are going to get $200 in ksuba, and the rest of the money everybody divides equally.
That makes sense. What's the chiddush? What else are you going to think?
Because Minat Torah doesn't work like that.
Because the property belongs.
Because Minat Torah, it all goes back to the father.
Equal,
and then divide it all equally. So these kids are not going to get any more than these kids. But the Chachamim said, no, it's a Tanai Ksuba, yeah, that these kids are going to get their mother's Ksuba, and these kids are going to get their mother's Ksuba. Now, the Gemara, the Mishnah says, even if you didn't write that into the Ksuba, it's considered written in. It's still considered written in.
I forgot. Last time you said something. The boys and the girls, they get equally if the father dies?
No, girls get nothing.
So why here in this case? Only...
There's no girls.
About Yerusha. We're not talking about Yerusha, no?
We're talking about Yerusha, but there's no girls.
Talking about the sons of
the sons of both wives.
But if there is girls, they don't get anything? Even the ketubah of their mother?
Girls get up, there's no sons.
Huh?
There's no sons.
Then the
girls.
Sons have to support the...
Yeah, but the ketubah is the male sons are going to get the
ksuba. Okay, we have this game.
Yeah, but then the sons have to support her from the estate until she gets married, or begetus, whatever.
Okay,
now. Okay. Then he writes, and that's one thing. Now what happened, remember the girls, Taka, he has girls, so they get supported from the estate. See, right? Benin, if he doesn't write in the ksuba, Benan nukfen, the yachse lechaminoi, the girl children, the female girls, Yavin, Yasa, Bebesi, will all live in my house, Umistanzim in Chasai, and will be supported from their properties, Ad the Talokhun, the governor, until they get married. Even if he didn't write that, Chayiv, he has to pay them anyway. The estate has to pay it. Because by the Ksub is that the girls get supported from the estate. So again, Shut Tanai Bezdin. So Gemara said, even if he didn't write it in the ksuba, that the girls get supported from the estate, they still get supported from the estate. Next, if he doesn't write in the ksuba, at Yosef Bebeisim and Zanim and Chasai, and again, another obligation is that when the husband dies, the wife doesn't inherit, but she gets fed from the estate. So what happens if the husband didn't write that in the ksuba? About the widow. Now, the first was about the boy's sons with the different ksubas. Then about the girls getting supported from the estate. Now he's talking about the widow getting supported from the estate. And he says, "Kol yemei megav nesach bebesi, as long as you're a widow in my house," meaning until she gets married again, because then the obligation is over, "chayev," he's still obligated to pay it, even though he didn't write it in the ksuba, because it's a tanai bezdin. It's a condition of the ksuba.
What is the last one you said about that?
The widow gets supported from the estate.
Yes.
Until she gets married.
Yeah.
So even though he didn't write that in the ksuba, it's considered written. The last one. Kacha yu'anchi Yerushalayim kaysin. This is the way the guys from Yerushalayim would write in the ksuba. When they wrote it, that as long as the widow is still widowed, and she didn't collect the ksuba yet, she's supported from the estate. But Anshi Yehuda, the man of Yerushalayim, Anshi Galil, the man from the Galilee, wrote like Anshi Yerushalayim, that the wife gets supported as long as she gets married. Anshi Yehuda Kaysin, the men of Yehuda wrote differently though. They didn't write in the ksuba, you get supported until you marry. They wrote, you get supported from the estate until the children want to pay you off the ksuba. If the children pay you off the ksuba, you're out. Ashirza Yoshim Lita Noch Ksubasech, as long as the children want to give you the Ksuba. Until then. Lefikach Imratsu. Okay? What did they do in Yehuda? If they want to inherit everything, the Yoshim, if they want, Naisun Noch Ksubasech, they could pay the Ksuba right away, or pay to Naisun and get rid of him. In Golil and Yerushalayim, the custom was that as long as she was a widow living in the house, or until she demanded the ksuba, they had to support her. If she demanded the ksuba, then it's okay, you're out, goodbye.
Which one is better for her?
For her, the first way is better. In Yehuda, because the ksuba you have to pay eventually anyway. Right? But in Yehuda, they had an option of paying off the ksuba right away and telling her to get lost. It wasn't so nice, but you understand, it could be not even their mother. With the husband's second wife, you know, and they're not even her kids. So the Mishnah says, three conditions of the ksuba apply, even if they didn't. Number one, the male children will get the mother's ksuba the way it is, you know, their mother's ksuba, and the rest they divide equally. Secondly, that the girls get supported from the estate until they get married. The third one is the widow gets supported from the estate. But over there, there were different customs between Yehuda and Yerushalayim and Galil. Had it, the woman was supported until they paid the ksuba. And over there, they're able to, in Yehuda, they're able to give her the ksuba right away. In Yerushalayim, if she asked for the ksuba, they didn't have to give anymore. But until she asked for the ksuba, they had to keep paying her. Okay, I think we should start. Okay, let's just start a few lines. Why did they make this ksuva binin dach dichrin? Why do we make that the husband has to give the kids from each wife their mother's ksuba value? He says, "Kadei sheyik beitz Adam veyichtev lebite kivnei," that a man will jump. In other words, like this, because the husband is the sole heir of deceased wife, and it's his. Why did they give off part of his yerusha to pay the kids? So he says like this: people didn't want to give the daughters big dowries. Why? Because if the daughter dies before the husband, right, and then the husband remarries another girl, her kids are going to get all the money of their daughter. Well, if a guy, without this ksuba thing, if the husband keeps the money and that's it, yeah? So what's going to happen? The wife might die before the husband does. Then all her money, the dowry, everything goes to the husband. Yep. He's going to marry a second woman and have kids with her. So who's going to get that money eventually? The second wife's kids, not this girl. So why should they make a big dowry? Why should they make a big dowry? There's a possibility that the money is going to go to waste. So a father won't give dowry to his daughter, a decent amount. And what happens if you don't give a dowry? Men are not interested in marrying a girl that doesn't have money. So what did Chabim say? Yeah. That kid is going to get that mother's ksuba. So if they write a big ksuba, they're not afraid because it's going to go to her kids, not to somebody else's kids. Okay, we'll leave it here.